John Wesley Hahn! I'm calling you out, John Wesley!
My friend turned to me with his left eyebrow arched, the way it always did when his face asked a question.
All right, I'll take a look.
I put aside my copy of Mr. Dickens' Life and Adventures of Martin Chuzzlewit, partially set, as you know, on our very own western frontier. I rose from the table, limped to the saloon's batwing doors, and looked out.
Looks like there are three men in slickers wearing heavy Colt revolvers waiting for you.
Ask them what the hell they want.
They're calling you out, Wes. That's what they want.
I know it, little bit, but ask them anyhow.
Wes stood at the bar, the warm schooner of beer at his elbow growing warmer in the East Texas heat. The bartender leaned forward to talk to a gray-haired man.
James, this won't do.
A bad business. Those men are pistol fighters.
I stepped outside into the street, if you could call it that. The settlement of Honest Deal was a collection of a few raw timber buildings sprawled hit or miss among the bank of the West Fork of the San Jacinto River, a sun-scorched, wind-blown scrub town waiting desperately for a railroad spur or even a stage line to give it purpose and a future. I blinked in the sudden bright light, then took the measure of the three men. They were big, hard-eyed fellas. The oldest of them had an arrogant look to him, as though he hailed from a place where he was the cock of the walk.
Mr. Harden's compliments, and wishes to know what business to have with him.
Unfinished business.
Gimp, get back in there and tell Harden to come out.
If he ain't in the street in 1 minute, we'll come in after him.
The tall, blond man's use of the word gimp surprised me. I thought the steel brace on my left leg, covered by my wool pants, was unnoticeable. Unless I walked, of course. I'd only taken a step into the street, so I could only assume that the tall man was very observant.
I'll tell Mr. Harden what you said.
I smiled at the three men. I had good teeth when I was younger. The only part of my crooked, stunted body that was good. So I smiled a lot. Showing them off, you understand. As I turned to go back into the saloon, Wes stepped around the corner of the saloon, a smile on his face and a 44 1860 Army model Colt in each hand. All his life, Wes favored those old cap and ball pistols, and he would often say that they were both wife and child to him. He wore black pants held up by suspenders and a vest of the same color over a collarless white shirt. Shoulder holsters bookended his manly chest, and he sported a silver signet ring on the little finger of his left hand, the hallmark of the frontier gambler.
You fellas wish to speak to me?
The oldest pushed his slicker away from his gun.
Oh, you know why we're here, Harden.
Damn right you do.
I'm afraid you have the advantage over me. I never seen you gentlemen before in my life.
You know us, damn you.
We're here for my brother, Sonny.
I've never heard the name Sonny. Nor can I attach it to a remembered face. How do you spell it? With an O or a U?
You're pleased to make a joke.
This from the man who hadn't spoken before, a lean, hawk-faced man whose careful eyes had never left Wes.
I made a good joke? Then how come I don't hear you gentlemen laughing?
You go to hell.
The hawk-faced man went for his gun, but not fast enough. As he fell to the dirt, my eyes went to the other two. The blonde man got off a shot at Wes, but he had hurried the draw, and the slug hit an inch in front of the toe of Wes's right boot. He didn't get a second chance. With only one man left, Wes swung on the older man. He tossed his Colt away and raised his hands to waist level.
Oh, I'm out of it, John Wesley. Now you kill both my sons, and I want to live long enough to grieve for them.
No, mister. You're in it. There ain't a way out. You brought it. And now you pay the piper.
I reckon the whole population of the town, maybe a dozen men and a couple of women, youngins clutching at their skirts, stood in the street and stared at the three sprawled bodies. The faces of the men and women were expressionless. They looked like so many painted dolls as they tried to come to grips with the violence and sudden death that had come into their midst.
This won't do. This is a job for the law.
The bartender, who seemed to have appointed himself spokesman for the whole town, looked at Wes.
Who were they, mister?
Damned if I know.
The bartender made it official. He reached into his vest pocket and took out a lawman's star that he pinned to his chest. The star looked as though it had been cut from the bottom of a bean can.
I heard one of them say they were here for Sonny. You ever hear of him?
No, I don't reckon I have, unless his name was spelled with a U.
You ever heard of a man named Sonny with a U?
No, I don't reckon I have.
With every eye on him, Wes made one of those grandstand plays that helped make him famous. He spun those big colts, and they were still spinning when he dropped them into their holsters.
Sheriff, a man in my line of business makes a lot of enemies. Hell, I can't keep track of all the men who want to kill me.
And what is your business?
I'm a shootist.
Me? I looked into John Wesley's eyes then. There was no meanness, no blue luminous light I've seen in a man's eyes when he takes pleasure in a killing. But there was something else. Wes looked around the crowd, his gaze moving from face to stunned face, and his eyes were bright. Right then, John Wesley was Narcissus at the pool, the man who fell madly in love with his own reflection. And the people around him, as soon as the gunshots stopped ringing in their ears, fed his vanity. All of a sudden, men were slapping him on the back, shaking his hand. The women looked at him from under lowered eyelashes and wondered what it would be like to take a gladiator to bed.
10 paces, my God. And 3 men hurled into eternity in the space of a moment.
Wes bowed and basked in the adulation.